permanence. That's what he said. And I think he's right, especially young adults. I remember when I was 24 years old, I loved to do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, however I wanted. I lived by myself. I didn't have anyone looking over my shoulder. I didn't have anyone telling me what to do. I didn't have anyone else I was responsible for. And there's a sense that even if deep down I wanted or longed for something more stable or more permanent, there was a sense that I didn't want to give up what he called the culture of me. The culture of sort of just being able to live my life and do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And I think there's something that he talks about there that's connected to something that really connects to all of us. There's something that he discusses that's related to all of us, I think, today, whether you're young and single or old and single, or young and married or old and married, whether you're divorced or you have little kids or you have older kids or you have no kids, whatever season of life you're in, there's a virtue that I want to discuss today that I think all of us need to consider. And we've been discussing some virtues in this series for the last few weeks called Eros. We've been talking about love and sex and dating and marriage and sexuality and all those things. That's really what the word Eros means. And if you're new or you're coming in for the first time, you're coming at the very end. So this is week four of a four-week series. So it would be helpful if you went back and listened to the first three. They're all online. And you can kind of see why we've been talking about this. And essentially what I said is I feel like there's some values or some virtues that we've lost in our society when it comes to sex and sexuality. And they're lost, and in fact, we can even find them or learn about them from this ancient book called the Bible or Scripture. And if we can recover these virtues or these values, I think they'll give us a whole lot more meaning and understanding when it comes to understanding our sexual or sort of romantic sort of selves. So we looked at two virtues the last 2 weeks, and go back and listen to those. We'll touch on those again this week. But we're going to look at one more virtue today, and it's a virtue, honestly, that sounds really old-fashioned. I'm just going to warn you right off the bat. It sounds outdated. It sounds like a virtue that doesn't fit with our 21st century culture. It sounds like something from Elizabethan England. All right? So I warned you. I'll tell you what it is. Here's the virtue. It's the virtue of chastity. Chastity. That's the virtue. Now, when you hear this word chastity, and when I hear this word chastity, I think we probably think of a few different things. I think the first thing we think of is that chastity means no sex. That's what chastity means. We just think it means no sex, and that it's something that we should tell our teenagers to have because they shouldn't be having sex, or we don't want them having sex with other people. But it's not something that applies to everyone else or something that anyone would embrace for the rest of their lives. But that's not really what chastity means. We'll unpack it in a little bit. But second, I think we also confuse chastity with celibacy. And the two words sound the same because sometimes we think of chastity and we think of some people that make a religious commitment, particularly like nuns and monks and priests in sort of religious orders. They make this ascetic religious commitment to give their lives and their hearts only to God and not to any other person. And so they don't have sex and they don't fall in love and they don't get married and they live a celibate life, and sometimes we confuse these words because even some religious orders refer to taking vows of chastity. You might have heard that. Franciscans do this. They take vows of chastity. But honestly, this is more celibacy. It's a very narrow sort of, and there are monks and nuns and priests who make this commitment. And in fact, I know some people who aren't monks and nuns or priests who have actually felt called to make this commitment, to give their lives for other reasons and under other circumstances, to give their lives only to God and to not pursue romantic relationships or get married. But that, again, is celibacy, and that's more of something narrow. Chastity is something much more broad. Again, we'll talk about that in a second. But there's one more thing that I think we think of when we hear this word chastity. We resist the idea of chastity because we think it restricts and it confines and it threatens our independence and our self-determination. See, it's not that we just don't want someone else telling us not to have sex, even though that's not really what chastity is. But if we think it is, it's not just that. It's we don't want anyone telling us we can't do something at all, especially when it comes to our bodies and to sexuality, that we tend to think that it's my body and it's my sexuality and I should be able to do whatever I want. I should be able to sleep with whoever I want, whenever I want, however I want, and nobody else should tell me what to do with that. That's nobody else's business. And this is sort of a deep-seated American value, right? I mean, we feel like we're sort of entitled to this right and to our own independence and to our own self-determination to make whatever decisions and whatever choices we want, especially in this area. And when anyone comes along and says, well, you can't do this, or you can't, or you shouldn't sleep with this person, or this is how you should think about sexuality, or whatever. There's just something in that that deeply resists that, that feels like that's confining, and just wants to push back against that and say, no, 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 I can choose whatever. I mean, I was resisting myself as I was working on this series. Like, I was thinking about it and thinking, like, you can't talk about this. You can't tell people this. They're not going to want it. I don't even want to hear this. Like, this is very deeply personal. And who am I or who is anybody to stand up and say, this is how you should think about sexuality or your body? Isn't that everyone's own choice and own right? But if we're honest, if we're really honest this morning, I think here's what a lot of us have discovered. A lot of us have discovered that our value of independence and self-determination, especially when it comes to our bodies or our sexuality, has often been a source of deep regret and deep pain and deep misery in our lives. Now, not always, but a lot of times. This sort of attitude that I know what's best for me and nobody else can tell me how to live or what to do with my body has actually led us to make choices where we kind of say, I'm just going to do it my own way. And that's not just a millennial thing, and that's not just a Gen X thing. I mean, Frank Sinatra, right, saying about, I did it my way, like this sort of proud, I don't care what anyone else says, I do it my way. And yet, if we're really honest this morning, some of our worst decisions and some of our deepest regrets or when we decided to do it our own way, you know, damn everyone else and what they say and all the rules that they want us to live by. I'm going to do it my way. And yet, oftentimes, that's provoked or created some of the deepest pain in our lives. And so, what if there was a virtue? What if there was a virtue regarding sexuality that wasn't restrictive, but could actually guide us to make wise decisions as it relates to our sexuality? Well, what if there was a virtue that could reshape the way we think about sex and love as it was meant to be thought of and practiced and lived out? And what if the idea of chastity wasn't actually confining or restrictive? What if it was truly liberating? Well, what if it wasn't sort of the path to restriction, but it gave us a freedom and a liberation? And it actually freed us up to experience sex and love that it was meant, the way it was meant to be experienced. So I think that's what chastity does, if we're willing to consider it. So let me tell you what chastity is. I want to give you a definition. This doesn't come from the Bible. The word chastity doesn't really appear in the Bible. It was some followers of Jesus later who sort of came up with this concept of chastity that they thought captured a lot of the teachings and concepts that are in the Bible. But here's a good definition. I found a definition. This is from a Jesuit priest who I think summarizes it in the most simple and easy way. Here's what he says. Chastity refers to the proper and loving use of our sexuality. Something everyone is called to. Something everyone is called to. So chastity is for everyone. Chastity is an attitude toward sexuality that everyone is called to live and embrace. And it doesn't matter what your marital status is. It doesn't matter how sexually active you are. It doesn't matter what your past is. It doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is. Everyone is called to chastity. So let me kind of unpack this definition. There's two words there that are really important. Chastity refers to the proper and loving use of our sexuality. So proper and loving, what do those mean exactly? Well, let's look at the second first, because I think it sort of drives everything here. It simply means that the use of our sexuality, the way we practice or live out our sexual selves or our sexual identities with another person should be above all marked by love for that other person. Because sex does a number of things when two people engage in sex, and we talked about this the last couple weeks, but we said it does a few things. Number one, sex is procreative, right? That's just how God wired us. When a man and a woman have sex, there's the potential for children there, and a religious person, I have to tell you that, like a scientist or a biologist can tell, like that's how our species continues. That's just how it works. So sex, first and foremost, before anything else, it's sort of designed for procreation of our species. But we also said it's intimate, and it unites two people. It's unitive, that it's such an intimate and vulnerable act that when two people engage in it, it unites them and bonds them and attaches them to one another like nothing else can. And it's not just procreative, and it's not just unitive, it's also sacramental. I mentioned that last week. That's kind of this religious word that simply means that when a couple engages in sex, it's as if they're recalling the commitment of love that they made to one another. That they made this commitment to one another to unite their lives together, a life that might even result in children and in creating a family. And that requires fidelity and faithfulness and a commitment. And so that when they're having sex, it's almost as if they're recalling or pointing back to that commitment that is the foundation of their relationship to begin with. And so all of those things, procreation, intimacy, and fidelity or commitment, they're all wrapped up in this idea of genuine love for the other person. What binds all that together is love. And so chastity is simply seeing sex and sexuality in the context of love, which is why chastity doesn't mean don't have sex. It actually means, in some ways, kind of the opposite. It means engage your sexuality in such a way that it's driven by love, and its end or its goal is genuine love for the other person, which is why chastity is something for married people, right? So the writer of Hebrews is a book in the New Testament. The writer of Hebrews says this. This is from Hebrews chapter 13. It says, marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure. So marriage should be something that everybody thinks is a good thing. It should be honored by everyone because it's the context in which this kind of love is expressed. And the whole keep your marriage bed pure part simply means practice chastity in your marriage. That sex should be something that married couples do with one another to express their love for one another, and so they only reserve it for one another. And so chastity is simply this idea, going back to our definition, that our sexuality is designed to be expressed in love for one another. Love that's marked by procreation, love that's marked by intimacy, love that's marked by fidelity, and that is its proper use. That's how it's designed to be used. That's how God wired us. And when we express it in that way, it creates the context for experiencing the true riches of love. Now, that also means when it's expressed in a way that's not motivated by love for another person, that's not wrapped up in intimacy and not driven and grounded in fidelity and not even grounded in the reality of I want to spend the rest of my life with this person, so much so that I would create a family with this person and we would have kids together and we would enter into something even bigger outside of ourselves, that there would even be a product of our love for one another. When sex and sexuality is not marked by that kind of love, it's improper, which simply means it just doesn't work. It doesn't fit. It's not being used for the goal or the end that it's designed. It won't be a source of joy and fulfillment and purpose and the kind of love we were designed to experience. It will be a source of regret, which is why chastity does require an element of self-control. Right? But self-control, not in sort of the very restrictive sense that God has said, like, here are the boundaries and here's the laws and here's the rules and don't cross this one. And God has this really good thing called sex and he's hiding it behind his back and he doesn't want people to experience it. And so there's all these rules around it. It's not that at all. It is that God has this really good thing he wants to experience, and that good thing is genuine love. And this is the way or the method or the means by which two people can experience it together. And so when you see that or when you embrace that, then you'll experience it. But he also knows that we have the capacity to sort of trade that view of love and sex in for a cheap and hollow substitute that just says our sexuality and sex is for our own gratification. It's for our own pleasure. It's for our fulfilling our own physical desires. And that doesn't lead to love. That, more often than not, leads to regret. Now, the writer of Proverbs teases all of this out with a long story that I want to read you. It's not that long. You just went, uh-oh. Shouldn't never say, I'm about to read a really long story. But I want to read you a story from the book of Proverbs, and the writer teases out all how all of this works, and it's this fascinating story. This is what it says, Proverbs chapter 7. At the window of my house, I looked down through the lattice, and I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who had no sense. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. So the writer sees this guy out his window. It's a young guy. He's probably not married. He would have said if he was. He's walking down the street. It's getting dark. He kind of knows something bad is about to happen, right? And he's walking toward her house. Okay, who is her? Well, he tells us. He goes on, says this. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She is unruly and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Now in the street, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. Now, she might not be an actual prostitute. And in fact, this might be a fictional story. We don't really know. But essentially what the author is saying is she is the embodiment of temptation. That the way she's dressed is telling this young man that she could fulfill every sexual desire that he has. That he could sleep with her if he wanted, and she's there, and she's everywhere. In fact, it's like she's on every single corner lurking and tempting him and waiting to fulfill all of his needs. And so, look at what happens next. She took hold of him, and she kissed him. And with a brazen face, she said, "Today I fulfilled my vows, and I have food for my fellowship offering at home." Now, let me stop there. We don't exactly know what that means. Vows, she's not talking about marriage vows. She probably means she went to the temple, and she offered a sacrifice, so she fulfilled some sort of vow there. And the kind of sacrifice she offered was one of those where she got to keep all the meat from it, so she brought it home. So she's essentially saying, I have some really good hamburgers on the table, like just waiting, of course. And the guy's like, done, I'm there, right? So she's saying, I have all this food at home. And then she goes, keeps going, so I came out to meet you, and I looked for you and have found you. and I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deeply of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money, and he will not be home till full moon. So basically, she is seducing him, right? And we can step back and see, like, this is silly. This is crazy. Why in the world would you chase after her? But he is caught up in it. I mean, he is enraptured by it. She's got the food that's all laid out, and what guy wouldn't love that? And then she has this desire for him, and she says, it's him, right? I've been looking for you and only you. And he's like, caught. He thinks, like, oh, been looking for me and only me. Like, he thinks there's something special there. Who doesn't want to hear that, right? She's made everything romantic. The bed is all laid out, and there's these beautiful linens, and she's sprayed perfume everywhere, and it smells nice. And she said, by the way, my husband's gone. He's going to be gone for a long time. There's no chance he will come back and catch us. There's no chance we will get caught. And then there's this promise, right? Come, let's drink deeply of love till the morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. And in the moment, that's exactly what he wants to hear, because deep down he knows love and sex sort of go together. Like, we're all wired that way. We know these two things go together, and so we want someone to whisper those words to us. But as every reader of this story can see, this is not love. I mean, what is this? This is lust. This isn't a love. This is lust. There's no commitment. There's no shared life. There's no genuine intimacy that's going to take place here. There's no fidelity. There's no faithfulness. There's no sense that God has brought this person into my life and I might want to spend the rest of my life with them, so much so that I would want to have children with them and raise a family with them, and we're going to do life. Like, there's none of that. There's just a sense that he's really tempted to go fulfill his desires and to feel really good for a few moments or for a night. And who are you or anyone else to tell me that I can't do that, right? Who is anyone else to tell me that I can't go have a fun night with somebody else if I want to? And so the story continues, and it says this: with persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk, and all at once, he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter. Wow. Like a deer stepping into a noose. Okay, we get it. Till an arrow pierces his liver. All right. Like a bird darting into a snare. Little knowing it will cost him his life. See, the writer of Proverbs, he's like a father who's gathered his sons. In fact, in this whole section of Proverbs, that's essentially what he's saying. He's passing on this wisdom to his sons. And it's like he's shouting, don't do it. Don't give in. Nothing good is going to come out of this. You're going to experience physical pleasure for a few moments or for a night, and then you're going to regret it for the rest of your life, because there's no intimacy here. There's no fidelity. There's no shared life. There is no genuine or true or real love at all. You're not going to experience any of the things that God designed you to experience to be connected to this thing that you're about to do. You're tempted because this seems mysterious, and it seems illicit, and she's alluring, and there's something about that that is tempting and drawing you in, but it's a trap. It's not real. It's just going to be this physical sensation that's going to fade really quickly. And you're going to have nothing left but regrets. And so he goes on, he closes his story by saying this: now then, my sons, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into her paths. Many are the victims that she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave leading down to the chambers of death. Really strong language. And on the surface, we might read this and say, okay, the moral of the story is don't sleep with prostitutes, right? Or maybe at a little bit bigger level, we might say, well, avoid one-night stands. They're really not good. But I think this is a metaphor for something so much bigger and so much broader. This is an understanding of chastity. This is embracing an understanding of chastity that sees through the hollow lies that we are confronted with every single day. That says your sex and your sexuality is simply for your sake and your pleasure and for meeting your needs. And chastity is resisting that temptation. It's seeing through that lie. It's understanding where that path leads. Not because there's a rule there, because God is being restrictive, or because God has something, again, hiding behind his back that he doesn't want you to. No, actually, yes, God does have something he wants you to experience. But it's so much bigger, and it's so much better, and it's genuine love, and intimacy, and fidelity, and all of those things. And God knows if you sort of rip sex away from all of those things, then you miss the very thing that it was created for. And that following our lustful desires is actually the way to death, not life. And it's the way to slavery, not freedom. And so I would say, if I could channel the writer of Proverbs this morning, choose life. We need to choose life by choosing chastity, by making a commitment to the proper and good and right and beautiful and loving use of our sexuality. Now, there's lots of ways that could be worked out in all of our lives, depending on whatever season of life you're in. And maybe you've already thought of some of those, and I'll just trust sort of God to help you see those. But before I close, I just want to highlight one sort of specific way. One thing that I think is actually the biggest threat to the virtue of chastity in our lives and in our culture, and that's internet pornography. Because pornography rips apart the link between sex and love. Pornography makes sex about my own physical gratification at the expense of someone else's objectification and dehumanization. I mean, there is nothing that could be farther from the ideal of love and intimacy and fidelity than what internet pornography does to us. It's easy, it's accessible, it's easy to hide from other people, and it destroys the very foundation of trust and love upon which all relationships, current and future, are built. And if the statistics are correct, most of us in this room right now are somewhat exposed to internet pornography. Most of us have probably stumbled across it recently, or we look at it occasionally, or maybe even view it regularly. The statistics say that more than 50% of all men, including Christians, view pornography regularly. And it's not just a male thing. About 30% of all women do. Now, I get it. I'm not holier than anyone else. I'm an average guy. I have average guy thoughts and average guy temptations. So I don't bring this up to make anyone feel bad or feel ashamed or feel guilty. I only bring this up to acknowledge that we have a very literal Proverbs 7 situation happening every single time we look at our phones or our tablets or our computers. She or he is always lurking there, easy and accessible to tempt us and say, enjoy this just for a few moments. And so what would it look like? Here's the question I just want to close with, related both to internet pornography and just to a broader thing. Here's the question. What would it look like if we as individuals and as a community embraced chastity? Well, what would it look like if we said, you know what, sex and sexuality, they're not going to be taboo topics anymore at church. We're not going to dwell on shame and guilt, and we're not going to beat each other up, and we're not going to talk about all our regrets and our mistakes and make other people feel bad at all. But we're going to encourage one another, and we're going to spur one another on, and we're going to say as individuals and a community, we want to embrace chastity as a virtue, the loving and proper use of our sexuality. And if you need help with that, come talk to me or Dan or Stephen. If you're a female and you want to talk to Emily, one of our other pastors, you can, or any of our wives. If you're embarrassed, if you feel like this is a problem and you need help with it and you just don't know how to get out of it and you're embarrassed, send us an email today, like, and we'll figure out a way. But don't try to figure this out on your own. This isn't just something for us as individuals. This is something for us as a community. And so how can we cultivate a way towards helping one another towards chastity with both truth and grace and seeing it as something that every single one of us need to embrace, that chastity isn't just for the Catholic Franciscans, right? And chastity isn't just for married people, and it's not just for single people, and it's not just for teenagers, and it's not for gay people, and it's not just, like, it's for everybody. It's for all of us. To ask the question, how can we choose life by choosing chastity? Let me pray, and then we'll wrap up. God, as we read that passage in Proverbs, I'm reminded that you are like that father, and that you want what's best for us. You love us. You want us to experience not only the love that you give us, but the love that we can share with others, whether that's eros love or even just love with friends and family and in all of our relationships. And God, you know that our unhealthy view of sex often undermines all of that. And so give us your grace this morning. Shower us with your love. And give us the courage and the boldness to trust you as a father who knows best and as a father who wants what's best for each of us. I pray this in your name. Amen.